Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Mr. Chairman, Mainakhtar Khan, Secretary Ashraf Hayat, fellow panelists, respected excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great privilege to have this opportunity to speak in the company of such illustrious experts on a subject of vital importance, Pakistan's neighborhood, including our relations with India, Afghanistan, and with respect to developments in the Middle East or broader Middle East. Pakistan is living in a tough neighborhood. There's so many crises, so many conflicts, so many divisions. And this neighborhood or region of Pakistan is also arguably one of the richest in terms of mineral wealth, especially oil and gas. And linked to that, or because of that, it's also been a region where the people have suffered from very extensive and very severe external interventions from time to time. It comprises two of Asia's largest countries, China and India, both of which are economically huge entities too. And its population is a very healthy fraction of the world's population, you know, the region that we occupy. And diversity is enormous. So it can be said that to a very great extent, the future of world peace and development and meeting the challenges which are hovering around, the future of all this will be determined in the neighborhood of Pakistan. So this means we are situated in a very vital area. But for the reasons mentioned, this is not a stable area. The region is enormously important, rich, colossal potential, but the conflicts that are there, both historical, of long-standing, and of more recent emergence, threaten to destabilize the neighborhood of Pakistan, which in turn is linked, because it straddles all the major trade routes of Asia and the world, could also have very negative impacts on the rest of the world. We have, for instance, you know, this area as a whole, in recent years we've seen, and even more so after 9/11, there has been conflict, there have been displacements, there have been killings on a large scale, there have been massive human rights violations. And these happenings, which are ongoing and getting exacerbated all the time, they are due to two primary factors domestically in the countries of the region. There have been developments which have bred instability. The kind of governance that the countries have had, the kind of policies that have been followed have led to division and differences and conflict between the state and between various segments of the people, which have overspilled the borders many a time, leading to displacements and all of these which I've referred to. But there's also been an exacerbating and in some cases originating factor, as I mentioned, this area has been subject to massive interventions. And since 9/11, US intervention in Afghanistan, then Iraq, then Afghanistan, and then America led from behind with respect to Libya. Well, if you lead, you lead, whether from behind or from the front. And as a result, we have several failed states in our area, you know. There's Afghanistan, our neighbor. Now, when you're failed, hopefully this is, it's a failing state, if you want to be sort of, you know, because we hope when you say failed, this is as if it were a permanent situation. It's not. Failing is a state, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, you know, we've Yemen, and other countries where societies have been devastated, regimes have been completely, it's not just changed, but the American policy of, what's it, NSS, its national security strategy of 2002, which in many ways is still being followed, talks in terms of preemptive war or preemptive intervention, which is hardly consistent with the UN Charter, and it's combined with policies of regime change, sanctions, pressures of one kind or another. So this area is an area of great instability, and there are nuclear powers in this area, which adds to the concern of people around the world. And American policies have always been short-term in their vision, because they're dominated by the political calendar in the United States. Yeah. And so they have to squeeze the objective developments and the objective timelines which are required to reach policy goals within the political calendar of America. Otherwise, they don't necessarily feedback positively into the political process in America, at least as the administration sees it. So all of these situations are there. And more specifically, we have specific conflicts, you know. There's the India-Pakistan dynamic. There is the Saudi Arabia-Iran dynamic. You have the mother of all conflicts, from which directly or indirectly many of the other regional conflicts have resulted. They've also had their own dynamics, but that's the Israeli-Palestinian or the Israeli-Arab conflict, which is also unending and doesn't look like ending anytime soon. You have the Turks and the Kurds, who are spread over many countries, you know, Syria, Iraq, and this has also complicated the relationship of Turkey with both Iraq and particularly Syria. You then have ethnic, sectarian, political and ideological differences. And then also there's an emerging larger dynamic between the US and China, which comprises both cooperative elements and positive elements, but there's also mutual suspicion, which can also sort of contribute to the raising of divisions. So this area is marked by colossal potential and immediate concern, which if not addressed collectively and efficiently, can get further exacerbated and become a real problem for everyone. We are also more broadly challenged, particularly the people of this region and Pakistan, by broader developments such as climate change, population growth, the growth of jobs that can support families in a global information economy, law and order problems. All of these things we are well aware of. For instance, by 2050, Pakistan's population, which is hovering around 200 million today, will probably be in excess of 350 million. And given our current state of education and our current state of the economy, are we going to be able to sort of cater to our population, or will we may have 15 more Karachis on our hands will we be able to sort of cope with them? So all of these questions are very much there, and it's in this larger context that we also have to deal with our immediate neighborhood, comprising, four countries, our immediate neighborhood adjacent to us. We have Iran, we have Afghanistan, we have China, we have India. And out of these four immediate neighbors, we have trustworthy, reliable, substantive relations. They could be even more substantive than they are, but hopefully they will become. But reliable relations with only one of the four, which is China. With Iran, our relations are a mix of pluses and minuses, which were highlighted during the recent visit of the Iranian president to Pakistan, which was a very welcome development, but it took place in the context of an intensification of the Arab Ajam, or Iran Arab, particularly Saudi Arabia, differences, each one accusing the other of abetting terrorism, and Saudi Arabia had sought Pakistan's inclusion in an alliance against terrorism, and in particular that meant ISIS. But the chief enemy of ISIS, which is Iran, was not included in that alliance, and nobody was fooled. It was an alliance directed at Iran and its alleged allies in the Arab world, including the Hezbollah, Syria, some would include the Houthis also of Yemen. So how did Pakistan stay away from this? We have made an effort to stay away from being involved in this. At times we've succeeded, at times it looks that we've been lured into, because we have very strong relations at all levels with the Saudis in particular. There's a very substantial sort of working population of Pakistan, which sends much needed funds to Pakistan, and we don't want to endanger that relationship. But recently the OIC summit issued a statement which condemned Iran, and Pakistan was part of that. So, I don't know how skilled we are in maintaining this balance. 20%, some would say more, of Pakistan's population are Shia. I think the Shias, their loyalty is totally beyond any suspicion. But I mean, if in a prolonged sectarian conflict within Pakistan, or which seem to inform Pakistan's external policies, could impact negatively on some of these minorities. We've had minorities in Pakistan traumatized, slaughtered by extremist elements in Pakistan, and I particularly refer to the Hazaras of my province, Balochistan, but also apart from them. So we are now going to have to deal with all of these problems. And with regard to, very briefly, let me just begin off with Afghanistan. We've had, Anatole has mentioned Afghanistan. But in Afghanistan, once again, it's true with India too, it's a question of mutual trust. We are seen by the Afghans and by some policy observers in Pakistan, not to live up to our undertakings. When Ashraf Ghani made Pakistan his second stop, his first visit was actually to China. When he made Pakistan his second visit, and he made it quite clear that he came here, the Prime Minister of Pakistan, as now, the Prime Minister of Pakistan was not in Pakistan to receive the Afghan President. He was in London. He's also currently in London, I think expected to come back possibly today. But he didn't stick by protocol. He went to the GHQ, met with our Chief of Army Staff, and of course met the next day with our Prime Minister and with others. And his chief concern was to allay any concerns of Pakistan, you know, with regard to India, with regard to hostility towards Pakistan. But at the same time, he did say emphatically in his talks that Pakistan had to make its choice as to who was its friend in Afghanistan. Was it the elected government of Pakistan, with which Pakistan had full diplomatic relations and was graciously hosting its president right now? Or was it with the Taliban, who sought to militarily overthrow them? Well, on the level of words, we gave very strong assurances that there's no question of a choice. It's quite obvious we support Kabul, the elected government of Kabul, and particularly gratified to see Ashraf Ghani here, and indeed the public sort of welcomed him. But after that visit, it was only within a few months that the goodwill generated by it began to rapidly evaporate, because there's very strong perception in Afghanistan that the territory of Pakistan was continued to be used by elements that sought the overthrow of the Afghan government and did not seek to participate in any genuine negotiated settlement. Now, as has been pointed out, this is something the Afghan government is also very much divided over whether to engage with the Taliban or not. So for all of these reasons, the trust gap with Afghanistan remains unbridged. And now, with the launch of spring-summer offensive of the Taliban in Afghanistan, the relationship between Afghanistan and Pakistan is likely to deteriorate further. The talks have been suspended. Efforts to sort of resume the quadrilaterals are all there. But we are also seeing, you know, there's the potential fall of Helmand and Lashkar Gah. There's a renewed fighting in Kunduz. And there is a deep, I won't say suspicion. It's the Afghans use this word of hatred. There's an emerging hatred towards Pakistan. We need to deal with this situation sensibly and efficiently, not only just looking at our own interests, but also taking into account. Otherwise, we'll have this problem. And there are many things that we need to do, which can be done, which are specifics. But right now, the fundamental problem of improving the state of trust between the two countries is not being properly addressed. With India, the coming in of Modi, well, he came in with a very negative reputation as far as Pakistanis were concerned. However, he sought to address that reputation very rapidly, and our Prime Minister responded, and there were a few good moments. But then after that, negative elements set in, which led to cancellations of various talks. And then, of course, the thing changed with the Heart of Asia talk in Pakistan and the attendance of Sushma Swaraj, which then was followed by the surprise stopover of Modi, which then, of course, followed by Pathankot. And as far as the many Indian critics, they look upon this, they see, well, all right, the Lahore, we see in succession, Lahore was followed by Kargil, the back channel talks were followed by Bombay, and now Modi's stopover has been followed by this. Now, this is not to say that that analysis is correct, but it is an analysis that is very strongly made in India to suggest that there are centers of power in Pakistan that don't see eye to eye, and our head of government, when he makes undertakings, is not always in a position to implement them to gain the kind of confidence of his interlocutors. So efforts to restore the dialogue are continuing. So currently we don't have dialogue with Afghanistan or with India, but there is hope in the air that there will be some kind of resumption of dialogue. So with India, with Iran, I mentioned, now with China, our relationship has always been good. It's been a tremendous asset. And currently it is centered around the potential of CPEC to bring about a transformational change in Pakistan. But sometimes we put the cart before the horse or the donkey, When we say CPEC will bring about a transformation in Pakistan, it's wrong. If you need a transformation in Pakistan in order to avail of the benefits of CPEC, otherwise you will not be able to become an economic and strategic partner of China in the way that it hopes and plans for. If that were not to happen, CPEC would be downgraded to a bilateral sort of arrangement. It is still, CP means China-Pakistan, therefore bilateral, but its strategic potential is very, very considerable, and Pakistan can play a very central role in the unfolding of this strategy, which China insists, and Pakistan supports that, and I think correctly, that China does not seek seek hegemony in an area. Of course, it's been accused of that, but it does seek an Asian collective security system which is not based on hegemony or based on the leadership of any one country. Of course, there are countries who don't see China's policies in that light, but Pakistan can counterbalance the suspicions of many of its other friends. You know, there's America, which has been a great partner for development in Pakistan, has given us strategic support. We've also sort of had many complaints about it. But I mean, we talk about, well, America may have given us $20 billion, although we say it's less, but actually the war on terror has cost us five times as much. And of course, America keeps saying do more, and we ask America in turn to do more. So it's a relationship which is fragile, permanently fragile and superficial. It is not rooted in the people. Now, we need to work on that, but we can't say America is a regional country because it's a global power, it's everybody's neighbor. But insofar as China is seen as some sort of counterweight to the loss of confidence between Pakistan and China, although China has made it absolutely clear, and I think Anatole made that clear too, that vis-a-vis India, or vis-a-vis the United States, China does not encourage Pakistani independence on China. Because China has said, we have our own problems with India. We have our own problems with China, with the US. We will not add Pakistan's problems with India or the US to its own problems with India and the US. That is something they have said so many times, but we always lend a deaf ear there. And sometimes, you know, for China, it's a little exasperating, you know. But nonetheless, the relationship hopefully will be developed. Right now, we were one time when I was in China, the largest trading partner of China in South Asia. Today, India has a trade which is roughly 10 times that of Pakistan, and it's increasing. Whereas Pakistan is, its trade currently seems to be stagnating at around 12 to 15 billion. Maybe if we can ready ourselves for CPEC, we have colossal potential. But that's a big if, because we see internally Pakistan is has so many challenges that it's yet to deal with. And if we can't deal with those challenges internally, and if we can't get the governance and the institutions and the leadership to deal promptly and effectively with the whole array of internal challenges, it will be very difficult for us to meet our external challenges also. Thank you very much.